Our guest is Jason Thomas, Managing Director and Head of Global Research at Carlyle, with us to take a look at markets. Jason, I suppose we knew this was coming after Jerome Powell told us at Jackson Hole that the Fed was prepared to accept recession in order to beat inflation. So do you accept that recession is coming, and do we end up beating inflation?
Well, first of all, thanks very much for having me. I would say that instilling fear of a recession is very much a necessary ingredient to get inflation back down towards target. Right now, the Fed is trying to take pricing power away from businesses. And businesses are going to be less inclined to continue to try to raise prices if they fear a recession, because price increases in that circumstance would be self-defeating. It would just mean lost sales. In the same way, fears of recession is a very effective way psychologically to tamp down wage demands. Workers who are fearful of a recession, fearful of losing one's job, less inclined to again, demand wage increases. So let's be clear, the rhetoric, the hawkish rhetoric, and also, of course, they put their money where their mouth is with the rate hikes, the 75 basis points twice that have occurred, the 75 basis points that's going to arrive today. But a big part of this strategy is, again, instilling the fear of recession so as to affect those pricing decisions and wage demands.
Do you see such an ugly scenario as what Nouriel Roubini is seeing in terms of stocks sinking potentially 40%?
No, and so I think there's two points here. First of all, I don't believe that we're likely to see a very deep, prolonged downturn. I say that because when we look historically, really over the last 60 years, the very deep contractions in economic activity are always and everywhere caused by excess capacity. And they're triggered when businesses try to downsize, they try to shed payroll, they try to shed assets, they try to cut losses and again reduce their footprint. And I think what's been revealed by the pandemic is that over the last decade, really the period since the global financial crisis, there's been too little investment. And as a result of the too little investment, you had extremely fragile global supply chains. You had inventory levels that were just inadequate, that had no margin for any perturbation to the system. Of course, there was insufficient investment in energy, which has led to insecure energy supplies. And so I do think in all these areas, we're likely to see increases of investment going forward. And that's exactly, again, the opposite that one sees in those deep downturns, which are always led by investment declining more than proportionally to GDP, essentially driving the decline in incomes, employment, and just worsening the consumption outlook, everything else. And then as far as stocks go and the decline in valuations, you have to look across and really stratify across valuations. If you look at the top 20% of stocks by valuation, they're about 40% above the historic valuation for the top 20% of stocks. If you look at the bottom 40%, it actually looks quite cheap with current valuations below long run averages. So that's very, very different. I wouldn't generalize about, an overall downturn of that magnitude.
I wanted to talk a little bit about China and the differential between what we're seeing with the Fed and the PBOC, because a lot of that is playing into these incredible fixes we're getting from the PBOC too. At what point do you see some optimism coming through in the Chinese economy? Do things change after the Party Congress?
I think they do. And I think that there is going to be a relaxation in terms of zero COVID. But ultimately, we'll see. I think that the more consequential aspect of the Chinese economy today is of course, in the property sector. And things do look grim. I mean, the data are very bad in terms of new floor space delivered, price trends, implied non-performing loans, et cetera. I do think it's important to note, however, that this is very much an intentional policy. Right now, housing and residential real estate more generally just consumes too large a share of China's GDP, consumes too large a share of finite savings, finite societal resources. And this made sense when you're moving 400, 500 million people from the countryside to cities. But today, given changed demographics, given China's high-tech ambitions, that savings would be much more productive if channeled to advanced manufacturing, hardware, software, and also medical technology. And so, you know, this is a lot of pain in the near term, but I do think it's actually increasing China's potential growth rate over, you know, I'd say certainly a 3 to 10 year horizon.
So it seems like time is a very important factor here. I mentioned that your commentary seemed reasonably positive about things maybe down the road, not quite as bad as Nouriel Roubini's long and hard recession. And then also on China, are you optimistic, say, a year from now?
I am. I think that the time really does matter quite a lot. I think, you know, you said quoting the note that danger lurks in every direction. I think that's right. If you look out over the next 12 months, you have, you know, certainly a slowing U.S. economy. I mean, the second quarter, because pricing power was so widely distributed across companies, you had top line growth in the U.S. among public reporting businesses of 14% year over year. I mean, that's going to slow considerably. You're going to have, because of the dollar, decline of about 400 basis points in earnings, just from the translated value of foreign sales and earnings. You have an energy crisis in Europe of uncertain depth and uncertain duration. And of course, the impact on GDP could be, you know, quite significant. And then, you know, because of the dollar, you have a lot of stress in many developing economies, short on food, short on fuel, and you know, simply cannot obtain the dollars or dollar finance, cannot borrow the dollar finance to purchase food and fuel, and you know, a lot of uncertainty there. So, you know, the near-term outlook is, you know, fairly grim. But I think, again, if one takes a 3 to 5 year horizon, there are a number of changes, I think, in attitudes and in risk perceptions that actually augur reasonably well for the global economy. I think, again, the reallocation in terms of China's economy, putting more of that savings, more of those resources to more productive use, is something that one would have to conclude it looks is going to improve potential growth for the next 5 years. And then, as I mentioned, all of the investment coming online to create redundancies, to create more resilient, more robust supply chains, larger inventories. And then I think ultimately the amount of investment that's coming in energy as well, as people become more serious about energy security.
So very quickly, Jason, the best opportunity now in the short term?
Well, I think it's probably India. India is the fastest growing fastest growing major economy. And I think what's most interesting about India, and something we've highlighted in the past, is that the return on incremental capital in the economy, essentially the amount of sales or GDP generated per unit of investment, is about 25%. So that's an incredibly high return on an unlevered basis. So that's certainly the place where your capital, your discretionary capital allocations are the most productive today.
All right, Jason, great to have you with us. Jason Thomas is MD and Head of Global Research at Carlyle, joining us from Singapore here on Daybreak Asia.